Okay, so our conversation today is around how conflict of interest in coaching can sneak up and bite you in the rear. So yes, we're talking about ethics, and I'm Tina Elliott, and I'm going to be hosting this today. Today is March 24th of 2022. I want to welcome everyone to this call who is here live, and to those who choose to listen in later. So as you were just told, we are recording this, so I'd like to, just from an ethical perspective, let everyone be aware of that. If anyone brings a situation or whatever, to, you know, keep confidentiality top of mind. Also, I'm going to do my best to keep the line clear. So I'd appreciate it, you know, stay on mute if you have background noise or have any distractions. But hopefully, you know, you'll engage. We'll have a great discussion here today because I really want to not only be talking about conflict of interest, but I want to hear from all of you as well. So feel free to jump in. If I do hear a lot of background noise, I will have to mute, and I don't want to do that. So I'll ask you all to manage that on your end. I know sometimes folks still call in on phone lines from companies and stuff, and they might have a habit to put it on hold quickly so they can deal with some business. Then we have on many times we'll have online music, so I'm asking you just to be aware of that. All right, so again, welcome to everyone. Some of you already know me, but some of you may not, so I'm just going to share a little bit about me. So I am Tina Elliott. I'm a PCC and BCC credential coach and a longtime past member of the ICF Independent Review Board, so the Ethics Complaint Board. And currently, or I should say just recently, got done with the Ethics Update. So the Code of Ethics Update we worked on actually for about a year and a half. Came out in 2019, and then we're still working on the Ethical Interpretive Statement. So I'm going to say I've been involved in most every code update at the ICF since they started updating the Code of Ethics. So been around for a while. Some of you may know me from ILCT faculty and know that I'm really passionate about ethics and certainly supporting coaches to operate with high ethical standards. So, you know, please ask questions or please share your thoughts as they come up as we talk about conflict of interest today. You know, there's numerous facets around conflict of interest, and as I like to say in my ethics training that I do, it can kind of sneak up on you before you know it. You end up in the conflict before you saw it coming. So what I would like to do today is talk about some of those situations, talk about some of the things that we need to be aware of from a conflict perspective, and then also talk a little bit about course correction. I'm going to be sharing also a bit about, I'm going to say, how coaches have gotten in ethical hot water around not being aware of conflict of interest and ending in a conflict. I like to say, so when I'm saying ethical hot water, that means, you know, a complaint. So that's something that none of us really want to have to go through or deal with. Been involved in a lot of those on a different side. But anyway, I think really what we're talking about here is having heightened awareness when it comes to, I like to say, potential conflicts of interest. So what could be a potential conflict? And take a look at, you know, having that awareness before we step in can be very, very helpful. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to ask everybody to go on mute for just a sec to see if we can clear the line. Okay, great. Thank you. But then I'm going to want you to come off to share with me. I'm going to kind of dive into just, you know, general conflict of interest. So anyone want to take a stab? What is conflict of interest? Let's have some shares. Wow, I know how to silence the room, huh?
It's where the interests of the organization are in conflict with the interests of the client. So, you know, an example just in general business might be suppliers are relatives and I'm purchasing from a supplier that's a relative of mine, that would be a conflict of interest.
Yeah, absolutely. Within an organization, for sure. For sure. Anybody else? Anybody have a share on conflict of interest?
I think I work with teams and organizations, and I always make sure from an ethical standpoint that I let the team member know that what I will share and what I won't share with their immediate manager. So we have a clear definition of what is appropriate understanding of, so there is no conflict.
Good point. Nice example. Who else? Conflict of interest. All right, so let's dive into that a little bit. We're just going to talk generally at first around conflict of interest a little bit. Then we're going to dive into more coaching areas of conflict of interest. So more of a primary conflict of interest refers to principles, the principal goals of the profession or activity, such as protection of clients, the integrity of research, and duties of professionalism. You know, it's something we hear a lot around conflict of interest is around the professionalism. And secondary conflict of interest includes not only, for example, financial gain, but also motives as desire for professional advancement and the wish to do favors for family or friends or even clients. And, you know, a conflict can really exist whether or not a particular individual is actually influenced by the secondary. So it exists if the circumstances are reasonably believed to create a risk that decisions may be unduly influenced by secondary or personal interest or gain. So that's what we're talking about here, is when we need to be aware of personal interests, when we need to be aware of financial gain, when we need to be aware of, you know, what's in it for me? You know, those are some of the things sometimes that can actually get in the way. So let's talk a little bit in coaching. So when we speak about it in coaching, a conflict of interest is a situation in which a coach has a private or personal interest sufficient to appear to influence the objective of his or her official duties. As a coach and a professional. And here's what happens. That all makes a lot of sense, I know, for a lot of people. But many times, the coach is not aware about this. They're not aware that this is in play. So what we're going to be talking about today is, how do we become more aware? What do we need to be aware of? And what are those situations? So, I'm going to say a conflict of interest is many times about our interest that is interfering with your responsibilities as a coach. I'm going to say ability to act in the best interest of the coaching profession. So it's not just about us personally, it's about acting, how we act in regards to our profession. So let me give you some examples, give you some ideas. So a conflict of interest might arise, let's say, when you use your role as a coach, again, for personal gain. So an example of that might be, you know, I'm so excited about this new client that I potentially am going to get, or I'm so excited about this new potential coaching contract that I might get that I'm a little blinded in looking at the details or looking at, you know, how this could affect others involved in this. And this happens, by the way, numerous times. I see this in ethics quite often, where coaches will get so excited about that new thing in their business, and they'll take that client or that contract without fully doing their homework and thinking about the impact. You know, I like to say, certainly in my ethics training, it's like one of the first areas we want to be aware of when we start working with clients is, you know, I'm so excited. They're a perfect fit for me, you know, when in fact they're alive. They're put the mirror under their nose, they fog it. But does that really mean they're the right fit for you? Does that mean they're the right fit for your experience and your skill set? Okay, and these are some important things we want to be able to think about. So being aware of how we are so interested or we want it, and there's nothing wrong, by the way, with us wanting that client, with us wanting that new business, but we need to be able to do our homework, I like to say. Okay? All right. So questions or comments? Coming up around that. Anybody have some thoughts or examples on that? Boy, you guys are a quiet group. Okay. I don't want to listen to myself talk the whole time.
Well, I think what you're saying is that we always need to have mindfulness of that our client is always first. The interest of our client is first rather than what we want as a coach.
Yeah. Good point. So our client certainly first. And even sometimes depending on how or where we're working, it could be in an organization. You know, the organization, the sponsors, and what's best for all of them. But you're right, our client always takes the center spot. You know, what's gonna happen, for example, if I'm already coaching someone who knows somebody else, and I'm excited about this potential new client, what's that relationship? You know, what do I need to be aware of? Could it possibly create a conflict?
I actually could not get on vocally before.
Okay, so
I can add on to another type of conflict, and that is the push to extend an engagement when perhaps it makes better sense to either let it end or mm-hmm. to give the client space.
Say more about that.
Yeah, I've seen this happen before I've both seen and heard it reported by people saying that it went on a lot longer than they wanted to, or, they felt like they got enough out of it, they're done, and then the coach kind of not letting it happened, sort of holding on, and the conflict there, I guess, is to, you know, continue to have the income or something, or not being able to let go of what is naturally wrapping up.
Right, good point. And that's another part of our ethics, too, isn't it? You know, is really having, there's ethics code that we need to be aware that when the client isn't receiving value or there's something going on, that we don't just keep extending, because that's in our interest, certainly not in the client's, right? Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else have a share around this? So what do you think around is there a conflict of interest if we, let's say, coach our family members, particularly our close family members, or if we coach our good friends? Anybody have thoughts on that one? What do you think?
So I'm curious about this because I have coached a family member from a career standpoint, and it was very successful, but the entire time I was very aware of outlining the relationship, you know, I'm wearing my coach hat, not my family member hat right now. So I kept reiterating that during the coaching time frame. And and by the way, I was at that time learning, so I didn't, there was no exchange of money. But I felt very comfortable with that relationship because I kept stating the boundaries.
Okay, good. And you know, ICF does not say that you cannot do that. BCC does. BCC is very clear that that is considered multiple relationships and not acceptable if you already have a personal relationship of some type. But ICF is a little more open on that, that we have to be discerning about it. But I'm going to talk, you know, as we close out the call a little bit today around some tips and share some things that how coaches have gotten in ethical hot water, I'm going to say, or certainly not supported relationships. When we're coaching, we want to support others and, you know, improve their lives, but have kind of gotten in the way. So that's just something to really be aware of. Is this appropriate? You know, is this the right fit? And we'll talk about why sometimes we have to be super careful and why that might not be the best decision. I know it can work out for some and be a good decision, but we'll also talk about what can happen to relationships sometimes too. All right. So I'm going to talk just a few minutes about a couple sections of the code that I think are the ICF code that are really important to think about. And I'm also going to talk about some language changes on the recent update. I call it the most recent 2019 update to the code, because when there's those changes to the code, it also tells you something, that there's reason to understand why the language has changed in the code. So I want to share that with you. Yeah, there's a section of code in the ICF, it's number 18, and it says to resolve any conflict or potential conflict of interest. And notice now, it used to say just seek to be conscious of, and now it says resolve it. So I think that says volumes, if there's a conflict of interest or potential to resolve it. And notice it says, by working through the issue with relevant parties, seeking professional assistance, or suspending temporarily, or ending the professional relationship. Okay. You know, and it used to really say, openly disclose the conflict. Well, what we found over the years, certainly I have working at the ICF and processing ethical complaints, because our work is so confidential with our clients, we can't always maybe bring a conflict out into the open. I mean, ideally, as long as there isn't confidentiality involved, that is truly the best way, is to open that up and to have conversations. But there are situations many times, if we're working with different clients and there becomes a conflict, you know, we need to be aware of that, that we can't necessarily openly bring up exactly what that is and who that involved. And I'm going to give you a couple examples of that a little bit later on. But what ICF has done is they've gotten really clear that it needs to be resolved. So it's not just being conscious. Yes, we want to be conscious before we step into a conflict of interest. But notice there's many options now to openly disclose, if appropriate, offer to remove myself. Sometimes when a conflict occurs, you know, again, being aware of, if I bring it to the forefront or the open, you know, will I be breaching confidentiality? Okay. You know, and I know we've already talked a bit about conflict of interest that may include financial or maybe even non-financial, personal or professional advantage. You know, conflict of interest can also arise out of making recommendations. So as a coach, for example, you know, if we are, I like to say, recommending specific resources, specific personality assessments, you know, specific coach training schools, specific tools, which is why when, you know, I certainly talk in ethics or even referring for services, you know, when everybody thinks ICF talks about referring to a therapist or referring for psychological support, you know, it's usually best, what we really want to be doing is staying in that coaching frame and coaching that individual to see what they know. Who do they know? You know, how would they find what they need? What ideas do you have around this need, whatever it may be? Now, that's not to say that we have tools in our toolbox that we can certainly share for specific things, but we always want to be conscious around that. You know, could this create a conflict of interest or not? All right, so that's a really important thing to kind of keep in the forefront. Like, for example, we get many tools. You do get many tools, particularly those of you who are ILCT students and those of you that go to coach training. We get lots of tools that are appropriate to utilize with our clients, but we're always asking if they're interested. You know, are you interested in a tool? But it's when it's financial gain, when there's something you get back as a reference or something, like if you were to refer to a specific person, that has to be brought out in the open and disclosed to your client. So we want to really be aware of some of those areas. What's coming up for anybody else here around a potential conflict of interest? Any shares here? Okay, so what I want to share is when we are always in our best form, I'm going to say our best coaching form, or also known as staying in the coaching frame, that also supports us from conflict of interest. So when we are asking powerful questions, when we are noticing and sharing, when we're, you know, tapping into the client's, I'm going to say, brilliance, tapping into what they know, that's another way that, you know, we can be aware that when we stay in that frame, we're not in a conflict of interest then. So that's a really important thing to think about as well. Any questions or comments so far? Shares.
I just want to clarify, when you're saying conflict of interest for like referrals and things and asking questions, maybe the differentiation between needing therapy or potential counseling for a client, the conflict of interest in making a suggestion of who to help give them, like, resources on who to see can be a conflict of interest? Is that what – I just want to make sure I'm clear on what – how that falls around conflict of interest.
Okay. So, you know, it's been a common in the past, or, like, even in business, it's very common for having a network. We have our own networks. It's how we build our business. And to refer directly to an individual –
sure.
And what I'm saying, right? And many times when we refer to others in our network or a specific individual, sometimes they'll do nice little things for us. You know, they'll send us money or send us thanks for the referral, that kind of thing. So what I want to say is the most ethical way to do this in the coaching frame is to ask the client what they know, who they know. Now, can we share resources? Yes, we can share resources, but actually referring to a specific person, not the best approach.
Okay, and not obviously not sharing the reason for the resource, but here's some resources you could look into, and then they can do what they want with it.
Yeah, but first off, we want to coach them first.
Well, yeah.
Usually they have a lot better ideas than we do.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was tracking with you and not getting in my own head on what I thought you might have been saying.
No, I appreciate that. That's a great question, and I really appreciate you asking it.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when we know of a great service provider. Now, keep in mind, coaching today, I find it challenging to refer. It was when I first started my business. It was local. And it was easy to refer clients locally, but that was 22 years ago. Today, coaching happens all over the world. So referrals can be challenging because of being, you know, our clients are in different countries. They're in different parts of the country. So I really urge when you're, you know, not to say you can't have a list of individuals or people, but just referring kind of a one-on-one is usually not the best way. Anybody have any thoughts or concerns or comments on that? Questions?
So if they cannot with a an idea. Are we, and just really, you know, or maybe have been to other counselors or coaches and have had bad bad situations, would it be best to refer to give them a handful, 3 to 5 different resources that they could look at, counselors or coaches or whatever they're in need of?
Well, again, that kind of assumes, I mean, there's nothing you can do that. Is that the best way? Is that the most ethical way? Yes, as long as you're giving them more than one. But on the other hand, we've got to think about where are our clients located today. Many times they're not in our locale. If they are, then certainly, you know, you could do that. I find the safest way ethically. For me, today, we have huge databases of coaches. The ICF has a huge database. ILCT has a database of coaches. So to, you know, refer them, many times say, you know, I'm going to coach them first. Find out what they know, you know, if they need a therapist or work, who do they know, you know, what do they have at work, do they have an EAP, you know, what ideas do they have around support. There's also psychological associations, you know, where our clients can actually go out and find the best fit, because somebody who you might think is a great fit might not be a good fit for them. So there's lots of ways, and that's typically how I'll do it. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. But, and staying in the coaching frame again, we always want to be coaching our clients around this, okay? Finding out what they know already, what support. Will I send resources, different psychological associations, the ICF, ILCT? Yes, if necessary, but I typically don't have to send that out. They know how to get on a website, most of my clients do, and go search. And some of those databases can be fantastic. From a sense of they're very specific, like the ICF, it's called Coach Referral, and they can type in to the system what they're looking for, what kind of coaching and what, you know, what kind of background or aspect they want. And it really narrows it down, and they'll get referrals from the system. They come right into their email. So sometimes that's just a little better way to go. Anybody have any questions or other thoughts or comments?
I have a question, and it doesn't necessarily apply to conflict of interest, but it is around referrals. Is it okay if I ask it right now?
Go ahead. We'll make it short. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering if you feel like your client or your coachee would benefit from counseling, and you yourself as a counselor, and in addition to being a coach, but she's your coachee, you recommend maybe, hey, would you think about going to counseling? And they don't want to. You know, it's like, do you, you know, continue with the coaching even though they don't really want to go to counseling? You know, what do you do with that? That's my question.
Yeah, that's a bigger conversation, but I'm going to do something really briefly. This is something we go over in depth in the ethics course that I'm going to be sharing about today, but I'm going to briefly, just very briefly answer that. I don't like to briefly answer this question because it's a little more in depth. But
I'm sorry. You know, I appreciate it, though.
No, you're fine. Don't be sorry. It's okay. Maybe I need to have a call on referral, huh? About referral. Anyway, it is our job to be conscious of what's happening for our clients. If we notice that we're sensing things are going on that are getting in their way of their work with us, things, for example, like they're not doing their prep work, they're not following through on commitments, or they might be sabotaging themselves or things like that, we want to bring it up and notice that. And we do want to ask that they get support and coach them around that to get support. And, yes, your client sometimes will say, yeah, no, I don't know, or I got to think about it, or this or that. Okay. But here's our job. If they keep doing what they're doing and they're not fully utilizing the coaching or being effective in the coaching, it is our job to bring it up again. All right? It is our job to notice that. And it is also our job to, I'm going to say, stay with love. You know what? This isn't really, coaching isn't working the way it needs to work. And so I'm going to really ask you to get the support you need. What is that support? And I will let them know it's okay to go get the support you need, and I'll be here when you're done. You want to come back for coaching? I'm happy to work with you, but what's happening here is not working. So it is our job to bring that forward to our clients. Okay? Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. Maybe we'll do a whole call on this. Okay? Okay. But I want to get back to conflict of interest for a second because, you know, that's really what we're talking about here today. There actually is another section of code that's really important. We have a few sections, by the way, around conflict of interest. One is more focused on internal coaches. But there's another here that I think is really important to take a look at, and that's number 10. And it says, I'm sensitive to the implications of having multiple contracts and relationships with the same clients and sponsors at the same time in order to avoid conflict of interest or a conflict of interest situations. So this code addresses potential conflict of interest when the ICF professional holds multiple contracts. For example, having, let's say you're working in organizations and you are already in their coaching one-on-one and they've asked you to come in and train the leadership team. Now, this is really common. A lot of coaches do it. I've done it myself, where we are in there doing that. Sometimes it can even be on the same contract or, a separate contract. So what we want to be clear about, be aware of, is this could create a potential conflict of interest. So even though I think I've been clear in what the contract is and what I'm delivering, who are the people involved? You know, am I going to be team coaching or training the individuals that I've been coaching? Are there others in there? Are there different relationships? What do I need to be aware of? And I want to say, this goes on all the time. I've done it myself. But we want to have that awareness around, you know, is this the right thing? Who's involved? You know, team training many times, there can be a lot of personal things that come out just like coaching. Team training dives into trust and all kinds of things. There can be a lot of personal things. All right? So it's important that we're aware and we're aware of the relationships. Somebody was going to say something?
Yeah, and if I may add to that, that's a very real world challenge, and that is you even have dynamics, I mean, never mind personal situations, but interpersonal dynamics among the people in the group being coached or even outside. What
right.
about the dynamics between coachee and the organization and sponsors? So those are definitely, like you say, you know, got to be so on your toes about what you're standing for and what you're coaching on and what you're advocating for at times, and it definitely can be challenging if you don't manage it well.
Right, absolutely. And there are dynamics between individuals, and that's another thing we're going to even talk more about, is when it comes to coaching in organizations and dynamics or friends, coaching family. We're going to be talking about that. Thanks for sharing that. Absolutely. So I'm going to talk just a second about this multiple relationships, because there's code in the BCC code that talks about multiple relationships, which is very different than ICF's code. All right. So what we want to be aware of, here's another example. So for leaders in an organization, it's really common for coaches to go in and coach numerous people in that organization. But even if we do that, we've got to really be conscious and aware, who is our first client, all right? Who are we working with first? A company comes, wants you to coach another. What is that relationship? And what are the dynamics between those individuals? And we might be excited about it. Oh, great. Another client of the organization. I'm already working here. Perfect. And see, that's where coaches will go sometimes, thinking that instead of, what do I need to be aware of? What is the relationship? You know, is this a direct report? Is this a colleague? Is there a managerial direct report relationship? You know, what is all of that? All right, so those are really important things we want to investigate well. We want to be aware of. You know, and I've heard numerous coaches say, well, yeah, I go into organizations and I'll coach the leader and I'll coach their direct reports. And, you know, sometimes depending on the relationship between the manager and the direct report, we've got to see, you know, part of our work is building that trust, having trust. So if you don't have a good relationship, let's say with your manager, and you have a coach there who's coaching you, and then your manager decides to be coached by them. And by the way, I've had that happen numerous times where I'm asked to coach the manager, too. What will that do for the trust of your client that you're already coaching? Anybody have questions or comments or thoughts on that?
What are the ICF regulations for when you are coaching an individual, and then their direct manager asks for feedback?
Oh, well, that's a whole other topic too.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm going to briefly answer. Again, this goes back to the agreement. All right. Mm-hmm. So whatever is in the agreement, yes, when someone is sponsoring, so that's another thing, whether it's a parent, whether it's a company, whenever we might be coaching teenagers, we have an agreement and it's made very clear about what is shared by the person paying for the coaching, all right, and what is not. And that's really important because we have to keep confidentiality when it comes to our discussions with our clients, but it has to be documented. What will be shared? When will it be shared? Typically what is shared is around the specific goals and the progress. And the best way to keep that confidential is to have like a three-way meeting with the sponsor, with the coachee, the client, and yourself, and be more of a facilitator and let the client share the progress. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I'm getting some ideas of other calls here. All right. So, again, multiple relationships, multiple contracts. It's really important we're aware. And like I said, this could be families. You could be coaching, let's say, two teenagers from the same family. And then you have one sponsor who's the parent. So that could fall under this of multiple contracts, because typically you would have a coaching contract for each. And but you have the same sponsor. So what would you need to be aware there? Anybody? What would you need to be aware of in that situation? Do you think confidentiality would be important?
For sure, and I don't think that is any different from coaching somebody who's sponsored by their manager, mm-hmm. which is that sometimes what I listen for when I'm thinking about, when I'm assessing the engagement before I say yes, is are their goals so vastly different? And is the sponsor stating a sort of, you know, hush-hush desire for there to be a particular outcome? That's usually a very quick sign that there's an issue with with the party.
You've had a little experience with this, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
This is not how we want to find out, though, right?
That's right. And like you said earlier, Tina, about having it in, you know, what's going to be disclosed in the agreement, it's so good to have that discussion upfront with all of them together
so that I can, and I do usually in the contract will say that, you know, whatever request for updates that's particular will go to the coachee. And I also encourage the coachee to share progress so that it's not always a one-way push for information.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Selena. That's really important. You know, I think what's really important when we're coaching people that we know or related or this or that, you know, we have to be so conscious about what information we're getting from whom. You know, it can be pressure. Like, did this person tell me that? Did this person I'm talking to today tell me that? Did somebody else tell me that? You're having to be very, very conscious of that. And so that's something we need to be aware of too, is, you know, conflict of interest. You know, am I going to stay in my professionalism and be able to keep everybody's, I'm going to say, stuff confidential when there's such close relationships, they're working together maybe, you know, they're engaged in the same things, where did that information come from? These are things that are really, really important to be aware of, just as if you were coaching two teenagers from the same family, you know? Comments or thoughts, anybody? All right, so I'm going to take 1 minute detour here. I'm going to share, we're talking a lot of ethics things here, and I want to share with you where are these ethics things, some of the other ethics things, not only conflict of interest, where we dive deep into those things, and that is the next ethics course. And if you're an ILCT student, you can sign up there. If you're here because you've come from my list, you can go to my website if you're interested. It's on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. starting April 12th. And it runs for 6 weeks, an hour and a half per week. So one evening per week, you know, and this course has been dramatically expanded to include many, many dilemmas and situations you might thought it could never happen to a coach. And you work through those together and understand how they could be a breach of ethics. And one of the things I hear back from many individuals who take this course is I do provide a very in-depth coaching agreement. I call it a one-of-a-kind. They say that that has been so helpful because I do have a sample agreement that, you know, I try to keep on top of everything ethical. And so they say, many say that's the price for the, it's worth the price of admission. So, also, those of you that are doing continuing education, you can get your CCEs for ethics and core competencies, or, you know, for training. ILCT has it available to students because it's part of a requirement for an ICF credential. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit more about conflicts. I'm going to talk about some tips about things you might want to be aware of. I'm going to talk a little bit about conflicts in organizations, because this can happen naturally if you think about just an organization itself. You're in an organization. Working in an organization as a coach, you know, working inside these, I'm going to say they're almost like a very large family. It's like a complex family. You know, it's never, our coaching and being in there is never done in isolation typically. You know, activities and changes that occur in any individual or group can quickly affect others there. So without taking a really firm standing around that and understanding that, and of course we won't even talk about gossip and things that go around in organizations, but being aware of the dynamics in an organization can be really, really helpful. And most companies who use coaches effectively, they really engage in and agree upon parameters regarding potential conflict of interest. So that can be something that's really important for us to think about. You know, it's pretty simple. A lot of times when we're working one-on-one, it's a one-on-one engagement. But when we're working with others involved, that's when, I'm going to say, conflict of interest gets a little more sticky and we even have to be more aware. So again, in organizations, you want to be super clear on who is the primary client, as well as the hierarchy of professional, I'm going to say potential clients and stakeholders in the organization. So that's something we want to be aware of. We want to also have a clear definition of objectives and goals and timelines, etc. So crystal clear on that as well. Yeah, we also want to have boundaries around coaching multiple levels in the organization as, you know, individual coaching. And do we want, is it a good idea to coach a direct report? Is it a good idea to coach that manager? We need to really think about that. What is the dynamic? Okay. And, of course, always we have clear distinctions between coaching and therapy. And then also standards and agreements for handling internal information, both inside and outside. So typically when it comes to sharing information, what will be shared, when will it be shared, the focus is typically on progress, goals, etc. But discussions always need to stay confidential with those exceptions that we're aware of. Someone's a danger to themselves or others, criminal activity, those kinds of things, then it is appropriate for us to release confidential information. But those really are the only instances. And, of course, if you would end up with a court order of some type. So I want to check in, and I wanted to see briefly what thoughts are coming up for all of you around you, your coaching, what you might want to be aware of. Okay, we're quiet today. All right, so, you know, the objective of this phone call today is to be aware, I like to say before conflict, to be aware before, looking for that, I'm going to say actually, before it actually happens to you, because it can be a lot harder to get out of the situation once you've gotten into the situation. Or let's say it's more challenging. You can get out, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well as a few tips here too. So like I said, that awareness is absolutely key. This is why so many coaches will find out it's kind of snuck up on them and like it just showed up there immediately. And I wasn't aware. Well, no, it's because you weren't aware. Because you weren't thinking about this before you went into this. You weren't thinking it through necessarily to be aware so that it could be addressed at the moment it shows up. Coaches many times get deeply into, I'm going to say, coaching engagements or deeply in to a contract and the coaching before it shows up and it's like, oh no, what do I do now? Okay. So again, really being aware of, you know, are my personal interests at play here? That excitement about that new client, I like to say, again, where we're so excited, we put the mirror up to their nose, they fog it, and we're like, woohoo, perfect client for me. So is our interest, you know, but let's say the client shows up, and your intuition, your ethical intuition, which is what we talk a lot about in the class, what is your ethical intuition telling you? Because many times your intuition will be telling you and showing you, but because you want a new client or you want a new contract, you're not seeing it clearly. So that's really important for us to think about. You know, I like to say, is your personal interest coloring your view of professionalism? So again, being conscious around your choice of clients. All right, being conscious. Yes, you can have some amazing coaching with family or friends, but I want to share a couple things about what I've seen come out over time. Is keeping in mind that when we coach somebody we're personally close with, we have a prior relationship of some type, many times there is a standard for that. Our friend or our family member will think, well, that's our relationship. You know, my friend is very supportive with me, even though I'm in this, you know, very challenging, maybe even destructive relationship. But always, oh, it's so sad what's happening. I'm so sorry to hear that. But when you put your coach hat on, we have to let them know that this is what happens when I'm coaching. So we're not going to sit there necessarily, possibly, but I doubt it, to say, oh, poor baby, I'm so sorry you're in this really destructive relationship. We're going to ask them questions, right? That's what we do. How is this relationship that you're calling destructive working for you? What are you getting out of it? What do you really want? What do you really need to do here? What do you want for yourself? What do you deserve? You know? And if you've got that personal relationship, they might go, oh, I didn't expect that. I expected them to say, oh, poor baby. Oh, this is tough. I know. Okay? So, again, yes, we can set the stage. I'm going to tell you, that's great. Set the stage. Let them know you've got your coaching hat on. These are the expectations. You know, if you tell me certain things, this is how I might respond to you. But at the same time, this can actually have effect on your relationship. Now, some of it might have a good effect, but overall, I've seen a lot of situations where that has not been the case. It's actually damaged the relationship. So I want to say it's really something to keep in mind, that when you are making choices around who you choose to coach, that you think really hard about this, that this is the right thing. What is more important? Is it your personal relationship or is it the coaching relationship? And sometimes we have to make that choice saying, you know, I'd rather just keep this a personal relationship. I think that would be best because I don't want to damage the relationship. Questions or comments or thoughts on that? All right, everybody's really quiet today, so I'm now going to ask you all if there's any last-minute questions before you leave today. Comments? All right, so what's your nugget? What is your takeaway? Let's have a few shares. What is your takeaway?
For me, having multiple coaching agreements, if coaching within an organization.
Ah, yeah. Good point. Who else? What did you learn or take away today?
How fundamental, a reminder of how fundamental the awareness has to be from the beginning of contracting through the work itself.
Yeah, it is fundamental. I even call that when I'm going in organizations a pre-contracting process,
mm-hmm.
right? So getting that all in place before we even really get in there.
Yeah.
Because we're not
Thank
dealing
you.
With just one person, right? Yeah. Good point. Well, have a share.
I think the reminder that when a coaching relationship has been ongoing for quite some time, there's not just value but importance in checking in to confirm that it's still a value and service to the client.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of giving those periodic opportunities for them to end if that's what is best for them.
Right. And, you know, it could be the other side of that, too, you know, where you know and are aware, but they keep coming and they're still not doing their work. That is something that we have to bring up, right?
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it, Kim. Who else? Nugget. All right, it's awful quiet today. Well, I want to thank you all for being here today. You gave me some great ideas. Maybe we need to have some conversation around referral and other things as well. But thank you so much for being here. It's been my honor, and I appreciate all of you. Look forward to seeing you again. Take care, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.